Made a couple of moves today. Reassign a minor league can, Senger, and then we optioned Buddha today. So he was optioned, and we told McGill he made the team. So McGill will be on the rotation. That's the update I got.
What did that decision come down to? Why McGill over Buddha? They both looked pretty good this spring.
Tough one. You know, we've been saying that we were going to be facing some tough conversations, and this morning we had one with Buddha because of not only the way he's been throwing the ball, but, you know, how he prepares, the way he goes about his business, how good of a teammate. And he basically did everything that we asked him to do. And that's what is one of those where it's tough. It was a tough one. But, you know, at the end of the day, we are counting on him. We know he's going to pitch a lot for us. And it's important for him to go down there and continue his build-up as a starting pitcher.
What did you like specifically about McGill spring?
Look, he showed up in a really good shape. He, you know, he was already throwing live BP. Like, credit to him that the way he approached his off season and how he prepared, and, you know, he was working on new pitches and all that, but he came ready to go, just like Buddha did, you know. And then the outings, the way he threw the baseball, how he was bouncing back. And this is a guy that's done it. You know, he's got a little bit more experience than Buddha, and we decided to go that route.
I have to think the first time he needs a six starter, Buddha will be a strong consideration.
Yeah, and that was part of the conversation, like making sure that, you know, you're going to go down there and just make that decision easier for us. Just keep doing what you're doing, you know. Because like I said, he's going to pitch a lot of innings for us, and he's going to give us quality innings. And it's important. We've been talking about our depth the whole time, and here we are. We're sending a kid that he's done pretty much everything that we're asking to do, and now he's got to go down to Triple A. But yeah, I mean, his name will be probably one of the first ones that, you know, depending on who you are, like roster-wise and things like that, his name will be one of the first ones, I'm pretty sure.
All right, we're back. Final thoughts, Talking Mets podcast. I just wanted to put it out there. You know, some people were asking me maybe for me to comment, because I like to comment on things that are going on around the league about the Ohtani gambling situation. And I'm not going to do it, and I'll tell you why. Because there is like two or three stories out there. This morning there was something about him betting on football. Soccer, really, but international football. And, you know, for somebody here who has taken, who's taken sponsorship money to help support the show, and gambling has been part of that sponsorship money, I'm not going to be a phony here and lecture you about gambling and how it shouldn't be part of sports, because that's way, way, way past that Overton window or whatever it is, Overton, whatever, that's gone. Like, that's not going away. That's a revenue stream similar to other revenue streams that can't go away, because you'll have radio stations take tremendous revenue hits. The responsibility of it and how the league is aware of it and how the league puts mechanisms in place to make sure that the players are protected, that's a whole nother thing. And maybe some kind of, and I don't know if it'd have to be written to the CBA, it probably would be, some kind of outlaw on gambling in general, including, I mean, fantasy sports would probably drive them nuts, but that might be where it comes down to. Maybe more about the venue and putting it with a bookie versus doing a fantasy league or something like that. Look, what happened with Tommy Pham and the fantasy sports. So it can get a little dicey. It's a tough call. It's a tough situation. They're human beings too. They want to enjoy themselves just like you and I do. But once you're in a position where the outcome of the game can be manipulated because of the money that you've put in, maybe on an unrelated sport, it's something to be concerned about. So it's a fascinating story. Thankfully, it's not Mets related. If Ohtani was the Mets, I think it would be much bigger with the whole Mets for clicks thing. I'm not going to get into that. But away you go. So anyway, that's not what this is about. You heard Carlos Mendoza. Tyler McGill won the starter spot over Jose Buto. He talked about Buto. He talked about it being a tough conversation. Mendoza's had a lot of tough conversations. It'll be interesting how those conversations went. And there's a guy that was on the other end of a lot of tough conversations during his playing career. You know, whether it be telling Vientos he's going down, Buto he's going down, Nito he's not making the club, so on and so forth. And I think G-Man Choi, you know, he didn't make the club, but he's going to be going down to Syracuse for a month to get his situation settled there. But I think that we had the first annual Darren Reed Award. Now, we talked about who Darren Reed was, and if you're a subscriber to the newsletter, I played an old 1240 AM WGBB segment that I did during spring training. I think it was 2011 or 2012. I can't quite remember. It might have been 2012, but where I had written over at the old NYBD, so it must have been 2011, about Darren Reed and how there's this award and who, you know, hits in spring training and doesn't make it. Darren Reed was this outfielder that always, you know, hit the tar out of the ball in Port St. Lucie, including, I remember, a game-winning home run against the Phillies, a walk-off. And he never could quite make the club. And he was a good minor league hitter. A guy had some pop, could hit 25 home runs, probably drive in 75 runs. A right-handed batter, could play, I think, all three outfield positions. But something, whether an injury, whether he was, at that time, it was a 25-man roster, he was number 26. Or if it was 24-man roster, he was number 25. Whatever it was, he always was on the outside looking in. And then he'd get an opportunity. And he would have his, I think his hand got broken by Alejandro Pena in a spring game where he could have made a club. It might have been with the Expos at some point. So everything that could have gone wrong for this guy did. He talked about it on the 1240 AM WGBB show. If you're a newsletter subscriber, you can go back and listen to that. That's out of the vault. But so I named in a positive way, because making a professional baseball team is hard. You know it. I know it. It's hard. And, you know, part of that is getting a few breaks, being in the right spot. And I said this earlier, sometimes players, they get sent down, it's a numbers game, and they get labeled by an organization, and they're on their way out of the organization, then they go somewhere else, and they're completely different. And guess what? Look at what happened. Yeah, you know, it's as simple as that. So anyway, I put out on X this morning, and the vote's still going, but I wanted to get feedback because I was torn about where to go with this. Now, early in the spring, I thought Clay Thompson's brother, Trace Thompson, was a real strong candidate. And as the spring went on, especially after a week ago, he had a walk-off home run, I thought Jose Iglesias was making a nice play. And I think it was a tough call because Zach Short beat him on that final spot as time went on. But really, especially after the news this morning that Vientos was sent down, and that's why you got to wait till the end of spring to do this. I thought all along Jose Buto was a no-brainer, because I assumed Vientos was going to make the club, right? And Vientos, it was a tough call, and right now 52% of Talking Mets respondents over at X believe it should be Buto, and I'm going to agree with them. I'm going to name Jose Buto the first Darren Reed Award recipient here in 2024. I got to, because we had the Talking Mets Person of the Year, and that was Billy Epler. And now we have the Darren Reed Award. So I have to keep like a file, like a spreadsheet of these awards so that I could go back and like we could go back in history and like put them out there. Because I mean, I plan on being here more than just 1 year. I hope you're here to listen to me more than 1 year. But to me, that's the case. Now, you can make the argument to Vientos because it looked like the job was his, and then, you know, he's pretty much embodies the Darren Reed Award, a guy that probably with most clubs would have made the team coming up north on opening day, but a money team like the Mets go out, sign a veteran, top-notch run producer in J.D. Martinez last minute, he's off the club. That's the Darren Reed Award, really the spirit of what it is. Now, Buto to me is interesting because I talked about early in the program, the Mets are going to probably need 16 to 20 starts. At least, I mean, you're going to need 8, 9, 10 starters this year. And I mentioned weather. If the rain that we had all winter is a harbinger of the spring, Buto's going to get plenty of opportunities. Now, how they option him up and down without losing somebody, that's going to be tough because all these relievers don't have options. They're going to lose somebody. So that'll be interesting how that plays out. And that's and what's you could see the difference between Epler and Stern. Stern's saying, you know what, I'm not worried about the options. Epler went out last offseason and got optionable relievers who may not have been as good as other options, but they were optionable. Here he said, let me get the best arms. We'll figure out the options. Fujinami was optioned down. He was the one. I mean, that's a big play there, but, you know, that's the way it goes. But Buto is going to get an opportunity to pitch in the big leagues and show what he's worth. Now, here's the interesting thing. He gets called up. He gets clobbered in Philadelphia in a big win that the Mets had in Philadelphia, a 10-9 victory they had. You know, late in 2022, a really good Sunday. I remember that game well, a Sunday afternoon win. It was really the epitome of the toughness of that club. And Buto didn't pitch well, and the Athletic, I think it was Tim Britton or Let me see who it was. I want to make sure I give the proper credit. It was, yeah, it was Tim Britton over at The Athletic. Wrote a great piece about that start and about how far Buto has come. A fastball changeup pitcher who was basically throwing curveballs that day to survive. And when you look at Buto's repertoire last year and how he pitched and the way he pitched this spring, the peripheral numbers that you saw this spring were very similar to the near 30 innings he pitched in September. And he pitched against some contenders. I believe Arizona was in that sample size. Miami, a playoff team, maybe not the best offensive team, but a playoff team. A couple of times against the Phillies, they got him once. He pitched well another time. Buto showed you in September that possibly he belongs. Now, the Mets were looking at him maybe as a reliever, but as they tore apart the veterans and that staff, he became a bigger part of that. Remember, the Mets were a top starting pitching team in September. Now, you got to take what you see in September, like I said, with a grain of salt. But here's a guy that's mixing in a four-seam fastball, a changeup, a slider, and a sinker. And he's not just doing the four-seam or the changeup. He's mixing in that slider quite a bit and potentially using that as an out pitch to strike guys out. That is a very diverse repertoire. I think the best part, if you read the piece by Britton at The Athletic, is how he's attacking hitters. And I think that's the biggest opportunity that most pitchers never seem to get. They just dance around the strike zone. Go out, attack hitters, don't walk batters. I mean, he walked less than two per nine in September. He's doing something similar this past spring, albeit against, obviously, spring competition. And let's see, because his minor league numbers have never been all that great. Now, maybe he was working on some stuff throughout the minors, but this is a guy that our good friend, as I've said before, Ernie Dove, has always been bullish on. And, you know, the Mets organization over the years has been bullish on. And maybe it's finally coming together. And truthfully now, you have two starters in Buto and Senga who will get back in the rotation, where you're now already seven deep. You're seven deep. And I haven't gotten to Christian Scott and the excitement that comes from him and his DeGrom-like performance the other day. I haven't gotten into Vazel. I haven't gotten into Joey Lucchese, the veteran. And who knows, maybe a Julio Teheran, who just got opted out of his Orioles deal. Maybe he comes. There was rumors of him coming into the organization. Maybe he goes down to Syracuse, pitches for the month. Maybe the Mets see what they got there as a veteran, you know, and what have you, and so on and so forth. So, and look, Fujinami's a starter. I mean, he's probably going to come out of the bullpen. It'll be interesting to see how they play him in the minors. Maybe he starts and goes a couple innings to get as many innings under his belt, to get his command and control under wraps, so to speak. So Jose Buto, who I feel is going to play a big part and make a lot of starts, is the Darren Reed Award recipient. So congratulations. Now, I don't know if it's an award you want, but I will tell you, unlike a Darren Reed who never really saw the light of day, I think Jose Buto is going to see more than light of day. And can't you see him getting about 15 starts? I mean, think about it. I mean, at some point, you know, you might have to designate a reliever, lose them, maybe lose a Tonkin or Reed Foley or Ramirez, if, you know, depending on how well they pitch and you designate them. And Hauser has to help out in the pen like he did in Milwaukee. And maybe Buto gets to stick around. I mean, I think, again, I don't have a farmer's almanac in front of me. I'm not a weatherman. I know it was a wet winter. If it's a wet spring, he's going to get plenty of opportunities early. He might spend more time in New York than Syracuse when it's all said and done. So, you know, there's that with the whole situation and what have you. But what's next? So a lot to, you know, look, the season's upon us here. A really good piece coming out at the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnog. Sign up. It'll be free for everybody with a special opening day promo. And I'm going to be giving you my top five opening day memories, my personal top five opening day memories. Be sharing, you know, some of the stories from those games. Not personal stories to me, but going back, looking at the box score, sharing what I thought were the best five opening days I've been to. Now, when I say opening day, not home opener, first game of the season. And then, of course, those who are subscribers, I'd love for you in the comments section to tell me your favorite opening day memories. Maybe it's, you know, something else. But I'm talking about the first game of the season. I'm sure some of you would say, hey, home opener, because not everybody's traveling with the club on the road. But I found five. I think a couple of them you're going to be surprised of. I'll give you a little hint. The Cardinals play into a few of them. It's interesting how many times the Mets have played the Cardinals on an opening day. So that's something to keep a mind of. And they're not all what you'd expect, and they're not all victories. So keep that in mind. So that's something interesting. But We have the first game of the season. We will continue to be doing the weekly show. We will be continuing to do the newsletter. I got some feedback, especially after the JD Martinez news. How come I'm not doing audio reaction? Part of that, I wanted to do an audio on Martinez. I was traveling. I did not like the wireless connectivity of where I was staying. I mean, the Mets got to give me a break. Here I am. I don't think I have to be worried about breaking news while I travel. And they go and they sign JD Martinez at 9 o'clock when I'm out at, you know, at a business dinner. I mean, what the hell's going on here, David Stearns? Can't you give me some more notice? But that's why I wrote the piece about JD Martinez, and I hope you enjoyed it. It was free for everybody. I am, and for those who are paid subscribers, I'm trying to be as fair as possible in giving the free writer signups something to, you know, chew on once in a while with a potentially an opportunity to sign up. But most important, I want to be fair. You guys who have paid, whether you pay yearly or pay monthly, you deserve the lion's share of the content because that's what you support me. I'm going to support you. So don't worry. I'm not, you know, changing anything. Nothing's going to be free unless it's a special occasion. But I think opening day is an occasion where we could be inclusive and bring everybody together and remember. And I'd like to share my top five opening day moments. I started working on the piece today. It'll be out Tuesday morning. I hope the latest Wednesday morning. But I really want to give you a couple of days to read it. Now, will there be another show before Thursday? No, I don't think I'm going to be doing another show or a preview show. I think that we kind of, you know, nailed it here. We talked about the spring. We talked about what we learned about the organization. It is, you know, the getting to know you phase starts Thursday, you know, the opening day. We still have a lot to learn about the organization. I think we learned a lot about David Stearns. We're going to be learning more about Carlos Mendoza. Let's see if the bullishness on Beatty and the bearishness on Vientos is what we see when the bell rings on Thursday. Will the pitching be as good as it's been this spring when the games count? We'll see. I'm excited about the bullpen and what the bullpen can produce, not just because they have an elite closer, but all these other interesting arms coming out of the pen. We'll see what the kids, a big season for the minor leagues. So many options that I think are going to come out, and I think we're going to learn about a lot of guys, and there may be names right now that we're not talking about that we're going to learn about. Yeah, everybody's going to be looking at Christian Scott, especially after that performance earlier in the week, but I think it's just way, way more than Christian Scott right now. You know, obviously, it's a time where I think, despite a lot of the negativity that's been surrounding this club for the better part of a year, and I talked about it last week, that last week was a good week, and there is still a lot of question marks. And just like with JD Martinez, and I said that they could go bad. You know, maybe JD Martinez, you got the last life out of him. When players hit their mid-30s, I talked about whether it be pitchers or hitters. Tom Glavine wins his 300th game in August, and he's getting smacked around a month later, and he was out of the league a year later by the Marlins in game 162. So things could change in this game quickly. But feel good about the Mets. I think at this time last year, although the Mets were in a different position and looked at differently by Vegas and the pundits, losing Diaz, there was a pall over this team. There was a disappointment still lingering from this team from Correa. You don't have that now. And to a certain degree, this year is house money because nobody's expecting anything. Mets for Clicks is not going away. You know that. And maybe similar to some of the real fun seasons that I've had. You know what's a real fun season? 1997. Mets went in much worse shape as an organization than they are now. Tons of negativity coming off the Generation K flameout. Bobby Valentine, and I tell you this story all the time, was taking over a team that some people thought was going to lose 100 games. Who the hell is Rick Reed? Rick Reed is a guy you're going to put in that rotation? Who the hell is Rick Reed? Within 3 years, they were winning a pennant in the World Series. Within 2 years, they were a playoff team. And 97, although that ended up disappointingly and they didn't make the playoffs, they hung in there with the high payroll Marlins. Think about that. The high payroll Marlins. That's who they were in 1997. They hung with them through most of the summer. Actually, were ahead of them at some points. And the innocent climb, so to speak, always, it was a fun season. Now, as the stakes get higher and as, you know, things change, it gets a little bit different. And the attitude of the fans and everybody is a little bit different. But, you know, ultimately, I think this team is at the very least, and you heard Andy Martino earlier in the program, the front office projects them to be in the mid-80s. I agree with that. I think with some things breaking the right way and maybe a move or two as the questions get answered in the affirmative or the negative, a move or two mid-season can maybe push them into a higher pantheon. But the blueprint is going to be simple, and we'll see how it's executed on opening day, whether that's Thursday or on the rain date on Friday. good starting pitching that gives up 2 to 3 runs in 5 or 6 innings, a bridge to Diaz that keeps them in the ball game and puts up some zeros and misses bats, an elite closer, and a crooked number that, you know, between Lindor, Alonso, Nimmo, McNeil, and then eventually JD Martinez, those elite hitters, they could carry the offense, and then let's see what the surrounding guys do. I think they're going to catch the ball. I think they're going to run the bases well. They have a manager that has a lot to prove. We'll see where he goes, and it's going to be a fun year. At the very least, even if they don't, you know, win a championship, and that's always, you know, we've talked about that, the best of the best teams, the Dodgers of the world, the 96 Bulls of the Dodgers, who they are, have a, what did Billy Epler say, an 18% chance of bringing home a title. Even if they don't win a championship, you know, I think we're going to look at an organization, and I feel we're going to, regardless, I don't think this is going to be a bomb of the season. I think they're going to be in a better place at the end of the year. You're going to feel good about the Mets. I think the Mets are going to make you feel good about them. There may be some disappointments. They may not achieve everything you want them to achieve, but I think you're going to feel good about the organization's future, and their ability to be a factor and get themselves into the tournament each year. And who knows? Maybe they're looked at like the Braves and the Dodgers from Vegas and the pundits in short order, because they were just a couple of years ago. So we'll see. But that's it. I want to thank everybody for tuning in to the latest edition of the Talking Mets podcast. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G, and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, whatever you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. Don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@talkingmetsnoG. Check out my opening day memories later this week. And I'm on Instagram, Talking Mets No G. I'm starting to post some stuff over there, so check me out there. And of course, I want to thank the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy the rest of your Sunday. Gear up for opening day. Baseball, Mets Baseball 2024 is here. Till then, take care, everybody. For the